Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Witness Safeguard Mission by Carol J. Post. A family in a killer's crosshairs. A canine determined to defend. When Nicole Woodard and her younger sister witness their father's murder by an unknown assailant, Nicole knows they're next on the killer's hit list. Now they must rely on Officer Braden Feldman and his canine partner Caesar for protection. The killer will stop at nothing to silence the sisters and keep the crime hidden. But what could their father have been involved in that got him killed? With attacks coming from all sides and dangerous family secrets being exposed, can Braden and Nicole stay alive long enough to uncover the truth before the killer strikes again?
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, my guest is Carol J. Post, a New York Times and Publishers Weekly bestselling author of fun and fast-paced Christian romance and Christian romantic suspense stories. I think we're going to have a lot of fun today, Carol, so welcome to my show.
Thank you very much.
So you write romance and romantic suspense. What do you think is the hardest part of adding that suspense element to your romance books?
Well, probably the hardest part of it is in writing for, I write for love-inspired suspense, and we have to keep the characters in danger. I mean, it's got to be like direct threats to their lives pretty much through the whole book, you know, up until the end. And so it can be hard to keep them in that kind of danger without them like taking stupid risks or the villains coming off as too, you know, inept. It's like, okay, how many times can you try to kill somebody and keep messing up? And so that's probably the hardest part of it, but I enjoy it. I really enjoy the suspense part. That's always my favorite part to write is the suspense. And it's tricky, you know, keeping it that intense and all, but it does make for good, exciting stories.
It definitely does. And so what is it? I mean, you kind of answered this a little bit, Carol, but what is it about writing suspense that really draws you as a writer?
It's my favorite part to write, and it's easy for me. The suspense is always easy to write. The words just flow, and usually my suspense is really strong on my first draft, and I do, you know, have the romance and spiritual arcs there, but I always have to go back through and strengthen those. But usually I nail the suspense on the first draft.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah, I'm kind of like you. I tend to focus more on the suspense when I do my first draft as well. And then I go back and said, yeah, I probably should up the lovey-dovey stuff a little bit, little bit more in it. But I'm so focused on giving the readers a great suspense mystery story. I try not to reveal who's after them or why, and until the end. Yep. And so that element, it's fun to write. And I love writing that they're falling in love while they're figuring this out. But yes, I agree that is usually the easiest part for me to write as well. So, and I love that you picked this question because I just think it's fun because we all have to look up strange ways to have people die in our novels or be killed. So what's the weirdest way that you have had a demise in your novels? Either they died or they were killed. Tell us the weirdest one.
Yeah. Probably not as much weird as just different from the usual stabbing, shooting, slitting someone's throat, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Yes, yep, and Pay the Price, the heroine's estranged sister is, well, she's called back for her sister's supposed suicide because she was injected with a lethal dose of oxycodone, and so it's ruled a suicide. And but the heroine is suspicious because, number one, she hasn't seen her in 8 years, but as a child, her sister was absolutely terrified of needles. So why not take a handful of pills instead of injecting something? And then whenever she finds out that the lethal dose was injected into her left arm, then she knows it's murder because her sister was left-handed. So she's sure if someone was going to inject themselves with a lethal dose of something, they're not going to do it with their non-dominant hand. And so that gets them kind of, on the track of maybe she was murdered instead of committing suicide.
Yeah. So how did you research all that? I mean, I always tell people, yeah, don't look at my Google, my search history, because it looks weird a lot of the times. But
Yeah.
how do you research, killing people in your books?
Well, I do actually do a lot of research online using Google. And when I'm researching things like, pipe bombs and car bombs and poisons that don't show up on a toxicology report and all this kind of stuff, my husband has joked for years that, he's expecting to see, the men in black suits come to the door. And but I think, I know I've talked to authors before who were like nervous about doing those kind of searches online. But I'll tell you something kind of funny. I used to fly two or three times a year, and every time I would check my ticket, and I would always have TSA pre-check, and no one I was traveling with did. And so I used to joke that, well, it must be because the FBI had already checked me out and decided I was harmless. And so I don't know what, it's just, the odds of it being every single time. And so I figure if your searches do kind of trigger something up there that they need to check you out, I think once they see your suspense author, then that's going to be, oh, yeah, it's for research. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I don't really worry about it. I figure, I've got a good reason for the weird searches I do, so.
Yes, yeah, no, I actually I don't lose any sleep over it. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm looking up stuff, but yes, it can be, I think, kind of just kind of funny to think about it sometimes.
Yes.
So yeah, you talked a little bit when you did an interview about one of your books that you picked the location of a national park. Do you have a favorite location that you use in your writing? Do you how do you decide where to set your novels?
Well, choosing the setting happens really early in the plotting process. And like for my last book, before this one, it was Detecting Deadly Threats. And my sister is my plotting partner. And so she suggested, let's have an earthquake be part of the story. And we live in the southwest corner of North Carolina, and the New Madrid seismic zone runs through western Tennessee. And that's actually, a lot of people have never heard of it if they're not from this area, but it's the most active seismic zone east of the Rocky Mountains. And so I decided to do that, and I wanted to set it somewhere, western Tennessee. And after some research, I settled on Ridgely, which is a small town in the northwest corner. And during research, we stayed in, because I always try to go, visit places where my books are set. And so we stayed and we camped at Real Foot Lake State Park, which is like real close there. And the lake was actually formed by earthquakes in the early 1800s.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, I love how you can get a little bit of that history in and of the area and just be able to kind of, visit and go and do. So that's really fun. That's really fun about
Yes.
that. So what do you So we talked about the setting. What about the inspiration for your plots? Where do they come from? How do you get them?
Well, I'll get a basic idea. Like I'll say, I'm going to do a serial killer story for this one. And so then my sister and I just, shoot questions back and forth. Okay, so what's the serial killer's motivation? Who is he killing and why? And then, we just toss ideas back and forth. And she has no interest in writing, but she's an amazing plotter. And so we just shoot ideas back and forth, and I'll get a really good basic idea of where I'm going and all. But then I'll sit down and I plot everything like scene one, scene two, scene three. I have my book pretty well plotted out before I start writing. And I think that's really helpful with suspense because there's so much that you have to build, through. And so then whenever I get it pretty well plotted out, then I'll go back with my sister and we'll, work out all the details and stuff. So that's usually where my inspiration comes from. It's like a seed of an idea, and then when Kim and I do our plotting, then it just grows.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I am not a big plotter, so and I love
Oh.
writing suspense. Yeah,
Oh.
I know. I have an idea of what I want it to do, and then I'll just start writing, and then I'll just get more ideas. That's just how my brain works. I've tried everything, Carol. Believe me, I have tried to plot, and I'm like, I am just really bad at it. So,
Well, one of
yeah.
I have two critique partners, and one of them, she's like you, and she says, if I plotted out the whole book, I would never write it because I would be sick of it by that point.
Yeah, it's not so much that I get sick of it. It's just that when I'm writing the story, it's hard for me to make my characters actually do what I said they were going to do because suddenly they want to do something different, and that different thing is actually better than what I thought of. So
I'll
I
have
get a
that
lot of
happen.
that.
Yes, yep, I know what you mean.
Yeah, but this happens to me like constantly, so it's not just one or two things. It's like whole things going whole different directions. So yeah, I'm just better. I just have to write to my strengths, and that's just it.
Yep, exactly. Yep. Yeah, mine, my characters like don't go off the rails or anything. I mean, it's still pretty. I'll get additional ideas and go, ooh, yes, I need to have that happen, whatever. But they don't like take me off so far to where it's like, oh man, I got to replot
Yeah. Well, see, Carol, if you
this.
didn't already plot it, it would just go where you needed it to go. Just saying. No,
That's
you have to
it.
do what works for you. I not tell
Yes.
don't change. So don't change.
Yes. Yep. And
So
you don't change either.
I won't. I have tried, because everyone was like, well, you'll write faster. I don't. It makes it, it I just it takes more time, and it just is not just not it's not the way my brain works. And it's
Yep.
not that I and it just it's just for writing. I can see the benefits for it, but I'm like, if it's not working, then I don't need to do it. Yeah. So what
Exactly.
if yeah. So do you have a favorite spot that you go to when you're contemplating your current work in progress for reflecting on it or reading it or whatever?
Yeah. If I'm actually layering things in or tightening or that type of thing, I'll usually do that where I write. And where I write in the summertime, I like writing out on we have a catio where the cats can go in and out. We have two cats. And so I have a bar out there with a couple of bar stools, and I'll sit there, and that's usually where I'll do my writing when the weather's nice, and I'll usually have a cat or two sitting on the bar beside my computer. In the wintertime, I like writing in the living room in front of the fireplace. And if I'm doing just like my final read through, then I just kick back in the recliner and read like a reader.
Yeah, no, I love that. My My cat was trying to bother me while we're having this interview. So they can be pesky, but they can also be inspiring. So I'm all
Yeah.
about that. Yeah, definitely that.
That's
It's not just dogs, people. Cats, cats too. Cats can be,
right.
wonderful, but also annoying. All right, so we are almost out of time, Carol. So let's close with, why don't you share which is your favorite, which of your books is your favorite and why?
My favorite book is always whatever I'm currently working on, and I just finished the sixth book in this series, and I don't have a title yet. I just turned it in yesterday. Yesterday was my due date on it. And I think, with the current book, it's fresh. I'm really into the characters and the story and the setting. And this one was fun because I've done police dogs and search and rescue dogs and emotional support dogs through Canines for Warriors for my soldier hero. And I've done the different type of dogs, but I had never done a cadaver dog. And that's what I have in this book. And so that was a lot of fun. And I actually based it, my critique partner, her one of her dogs sired a search and well, they call them search and recovery, but a dog that became certified, white German Shepherd, became certified in human remains detection and all, and went on to work 9/11 in the Fresh Kills landfill after the 9/11 attacks. So that's my Jerry, and my white German Shepherd Jerry is based on that Jerry.
Yes, and I love that. I'm with you. Usually this is a book either I just wrote or I'm writing now that's my favorite because I can't remember all the other ones.
Yeah,
It's
and that's it.
partly that too. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us today, Carol. It's been a delight to talk with you.
Yes, it's been so much fun. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you for having me, Sarah.
Now an excerpt from Witness Safeguard Mission by Carol J. Post. Nicole Woodard moved through the woods at a slow jog. The June day was muggy, but a gentle breeze made it quite comfortable. A poplar branch scraped her cheek, and she slowed her pace. "Come on, Maddie, we need to get back to the house." Her little sister skidded to a stop and crossed her arms without turning around. "I don't wanna." A foot stomp emphasized the sentiment. "It's time for lunch. Dad's probably back now." Maddie turned, a downed tree snagging her gaze, and her eyes widened. The tree was huge, its jagged roots extending a good 6 feet from the base. It would make great firewood for use this winter. If things went as Nicole hoped, she wouldn't be here to enjoy it. She'd planned to come back home after finishing her degree, for a visit, not an indefinite stay. Now, instead of accepting that school psychologist job she'd been offered in Cleveland, Ohio, she was chasing a spoiled 7-year-old through the woods in the sticks of Kentucky. Maddie skipped toward the tree and maneuvered her body through the mass of roots. "Look, Cole, it's a secret fort." Nicole heaved a sigh. "We need to get back. After lunch, I want to go see Mom." When she'd arrived yesterday, she dropped her bags off at the house and headed straight to the hospital. The woman lying there barely resembled the one she'd hugged goodbye at the end of spring break. If the diagnosis hadn't aged her, two surgeries and an aggressive round of chemo had. "I want to go with you." "Dad will take you later this afternoon." The hospital waived the minimum age requirement for children of patients when accompanied by an adult. "I want to go both times." "I'm not coming right home afterward." She'd already made plans to have an early dinner with friends. As much as she loved her sister, she wasn't going to change those plans or play babysitter while enjoying them. Maddie peered between two large roots. That signature stubbornness underlay the eagerness in her eyes. "I could go with you." "Not this time." Nicole extended her hand. "Come on, let's have lunch. When I get home this evening, we'll play sushi go." The stubbornness fled and a smile climbed up her cheeks. "Okay." Nicole squeezed the hand that slid into hers. Throughout her childhood, she'd begged her parents for a little sister. By the time she'd gotten her wish, it had been too late to enjoy it. She'd been a few months shy of high school graduation. In spite of the 17-year age difference, the family resemblance was strong. If one put their first-grade school pictures side by side, they looked like twins, with the same large brown eyes and hair so dark it was almost black, both thanks to their mother's Italian heritage. "Can we play Hungry Hungry Hippos, too?" Sure, until Dad says it's bedtime. Maybe that wasn't a good promise to make. Maddie might not even have a bedtime, especially now that school was out. The rules were more lax for the younger daughter than they'd been for the older one. Approval flowed more freely, too. Of course, she couldn't compare her upbringing to her little sister's. Nicole had had two healthy parents. For the past 2 years, their father's focus had been more on caring for a sick wife than raising a well-behaved daughter. Maddie swung Nicole's hand in an exaggerated arc. I like it out here. Mom and Dad don't let me walk by myself. I like it, too. While I'm here, we can go for a walk every day. The property really was pretty, although she hadn't appreciated it when her parents had dragged her here at the age of 17. She had been happy in Memphis, ready to start her senior year of high school. Then her mom's parents had passed away, leaving her mom and uncle two homes on 400 acres of land, bordering a national forest on one side and prison grounds at the back. For her uncle, the inheritance had come at the perfect time. After a business failure and some bad investments, his home had been in foreclosure. For Nicole, being pulled away from her friends and the much-anticipated senior activities had been the pits. Her mother's pleas to make the move after Nicole graduated had fallen on deaf ears. Her authoritative father had insisted, and her mother had acquiesced because that was what she always did. Maddie began to sing softly, some silly, happy children's song about a fat cat. Nicole envied that childish lightheartedness, the being blissfully unaware of adult-sized problems. Their parents had probably sugarcoated the details about their mom's cancer, keeping the worst of it from 7-year-old Maddie. Nicole smiled down at her little sister. She wouldn't do anything to destroy that innocence. From somewhere ahead, a male voice drifted to them on the gentle breeze. It didn't belong to her father, and it was too deep to be her uncle's. Nicole stiffened, a wave of uneasiness sweeping through her. She drew to a sudden stop and shushed her little sister. The fat cat song died mid-phrase. The bass voice came again, followed by her father's. Her breath released in a rush, and she glanced at Maddie. Come on, Dad's back. They'd just started to move when her dad spoke again. This time his voice was raised, anger lacing his tone. She stood stock still, every sense on high alert. Something was wrong. Her father was always in control. Even during the frequent scolding she'd received when she'd failed to live up to his expectations, he'd never raised his voice. Someone had ticked him off. The man he was with spoke again, his voice low and controlled. Her father's response was immediate. I won't be any part of this. Suddenly, someone was crashing through the woods toward them. Nicole slipped behind a tree and ducked into the undergrowth there, pulling Maddie down with her and praying they weren't sharing their hiding place with anything that slithered. What's going on? Maddie's voice was thin, filled with fear. Nicole put a finger over her sister's lips and leaned close. Let's play a game and see how quiet we can be. Maddie nodded, brown eyes wide. Moments later, someone fell to the ground a short distance away. There were some rustles and grunts and then the thud of fists against flesh. Someone was being beaten up. If Nicole had to guess, it was her father. She pressed a hand over her sister's mouth and held a finger in front of her own lips. Once sure her sister would remain quiet, she lifted her head to peer through the top of the undergrowth. A man was squatting with his back to her, her father lying on the ground in front of him. As she watched, he pulled something from his pocket and pressed a button. A blade extended from the end, glistening in the beam of sunlight that pierced the canopy overhead. A soft gasp slipped between her lips. The man was going to hurt her father. She had to do something. She rose from her crouch as the stranger lifted his arm. I'll make sure you keep your mouth shut. His tone held a cold steeliness. The arm holding the knife swung in a downward arc, and her father released an agonized scream. Nicole pressed a hand over her mouth to keep her own from escaping. She should have thought of her sister. Maddie screamed loud and long as the man plunged the knife into their father's torso 3 more times.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.